This Week in Retronauts, I once had a clever intro in mind for this episode, but then I took an arrow to the knee. Hi everyone, welcome to Retronauts episode, I think it's 410, 411, something like that. It's way up there.
That's a lot.
This is episode 411 with the 411 on Skyrim, the Elder Scrolls part 5, I think, and probably final. I don't know if they're ever going to make an Elder Scrolls 6, but who needs to, because none of us here have ever finished Skyrim. It's the game that just keeps giving and giving and giving and giving. Yeah, I'm Jeremy Parrish. I never beat Skyrim, but I did spend like 150 hours in Skyrim, so in a sense, it's a part of me now. Who else is here recording in this makeshift studio?
Hi, it's Kat Bailey, Winterhold College Dean.
It's Jeff Green. I don't remember what any of my titles were because it's been so long.
We'll call you the Jarl.
Sure, I'm happy to be the Jarl, sure. Yeah.
Aren't you not the Dragonborn?
Yeah, you're the Black Dragon.
You're the Black
the
Dragon.
The Black Dragonborn, yeah.
That, I'm pretty sure that was a 1970s superhero.
Probably was.
Ray Barnhold, probably the... Well, my surname is pretty close to some of the stuff in Skyrim.
That's true.
Not exactly Norse, but...
Well, there you go. So, yes, this episode commemorates the... Believe it or not, 10th anniversary of Skyrim. It doesn't seem like it could be that old. Probably because Bethesda keeps putting it on like every physical device. I think I can play it on my Apple Watch. I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if the app shows up at some point, letting me play Skyrim. There was something someone did where they like played it on a monochrome computer monitor or something. And it was very abstract. They showed the intro with the wagon where you start the game out, and it was recognizable. But you kind of needed the context of having seen the real thing to be able to understand what it was. But but you know, if there's a will, there's a way. It's the new Doom.
I think that was an Amazon Alexa version too.
Yes, yes.
Play by voice guidance,
something like that. I never actually saw it, but I know it existed.
Alexa, sneak,
something like that. Yeah,
Alexa, Fusroda. Right. I'd be into that. So I guess the question then is, what relationship has everyone had with the game Skyrim? That's actually going to be pretty much the thrust of this episode. Like I said before we started, my approach to this episode is the same as my approach to the game, which is just like, whatever. I mean, I could have sat down and we could have gone through and talked about what the director did and what their bona fides were and, you know, very meticulously detail the geography of Skyrim and give you the quest structure. But who the hell actually plays Skyrim like that? That seems antithetical to the spirit of the game and really to Bethesda's work in general, but especially this game, where it's just like, here's a very cold, big place. Go do some stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go catch some bees. Go eat mushrooms. Do whatever you want. But yeah, I mean, I'll start here. I reviewed Skyrim for 1UP.com. I did not beat the game before reviewing it, but
did
like
you
I said,
do the race across Skyrim?
Yes. I did 150 hours in Skyrim. I feel like if you can't review a game based on that much experience, like what more does, I mean, that's plenty. That's enough. Yeah. I don't subscribe to the rubric that every game has to be completed. Some games are just not meant to be finished. And I feel like Skyrim is one of those. I thoroughly enjoyed my time in Skyrim and I had no desire to see the story. I just wanted to see Skyrim and I did. Jeff, what about you?
Well, let's see. I looked before I joined here just to see out of curiosity on the original Skyrim on, well, I don't actually know if that's the first time I played it on Steam. I have 200 hours of the original version, but then there's a special edition version that they put out where I have another 100 hours. And then I got it for the Switch. And on that, I've got like 50 something hours. So I don't know.
Wow. How was the Switch version? I've never played it on there.
It's actually pretty good.
Holds up pretty well?
It does hold up.
So. Is it better than the 360 and the PS3 version?
I would only be guessing because it's been so long since I've looked at those versions, but I wouldn't be surprised if it looks better. It looks pretty good
in fairness,
handheld mode.
It's not hard to be better than the PS3 version, which rather famously suffered from a memory leak that
right.
would just be a huge problem with it. And I'm not even sure if they ever patched that.
Yeah. That's not really the Bethesda way.
No. Other people do the patching for
them. They just release it on new platforms.
Right.
With whole new bugs.
With all new bugs, yeah.
We'll fix it next time you buy it.
Yeah, I never finished it. I don't plan on ever finishing it, really. I totally ascribe to the same thing as you, that you just go live in their games. In fact, I don't think I've beat any Elder Scrolls games, even though I played them all starting from... Daggerfall was actually my first. Never beat any of them, proudly.
Ray, what about you?
Well, my situation's a little bit more mixed up than that. I'll put it in terms of like Skyrim and Elder Scrolls in general. So first of all, Skyrim, at the time when it came out, I didn't have a good enough PC. So I did decide, for whatever reason, I apologize, I picked the PS3 version. But
you don't have to apologize. They
you
owe
monster.
You an apology.
Wait a minute. But, okay.
Cut his mic.
Here's the great thing about the PS3 version is that, thank God, someone made a tool to convert the saves to PC.
Mm.
So I ended up on PC eventually.
Nice.
And that's just the basic thing with Skyrim. I've stayed with basically that vanilla Steam version for a while. But in terms of Elder Scrolls in general, I am a proud card-carrying Elder Scrolls tourist. I started with Morrowind, and ever since then, what I do is I start that game up, go in the settings, go to the difficulty, slide that all the way to the left, to zero or whatever, and then go and play and do whatever. You know, playing is, you know, a relative term in this sense. But I'm going to jump back to Skyrim. I did eventually choose to just go through the main quest line because I was like, eh, whatever. What else am I going to do? So I guess in that particular sense, I've beat Skyrim and
that
I completed
here.
The main story quest line. Yeah, except I don't remember a damn thing. I did some dragon roaring, you know.
Some dragons
some shouting.
Roaring. Yeah.
I remember that happened. I saved the day somehow. But yeah, there you go.
At least you saved it until those elves unwrite the universe or whatever they're trying to do.
Right, yeah. See, you remember more than I did, but you reviewed it, so.
What about you, Kat?
I was working at GamePro at the time, and I remember doing the preview for Skyrim. I was not on the review for that one, and it was a while before I actually played it. I think it was maybe the first proper Bethesda game I played. When I built my gaming PC in 2014, one of the first things I did was download Skyrim and just throw a ton of mods on it, graphical mods, like the various costume mods, that kind of thing, and dramatically improved the visuals and everything. And then I proceeded to spend like 200 hours exploring it, having a great time and everything. And like the rest of you, I never did finish it because ultimately I did not want to have to choose between the Empire and the Nords. I did not want to be forced into that particular decision. So I was happy to kind of make my own way.
Fair enough. Yeah, I had never played maybe a Bethesda game, definitely not an Elder Scrolls game before this. And I was basically kind of the person who ended up going to a preview event here in town. I had to go up to like Potrero or something. And I went with no expectations and no experience, not knowing what I was going to do. I was like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, I'm the last person who should be doing this, but for whatever reason, it was me. So I went and I was like, oh, this is really enjoyable. Like, from the very beginning, I understood that I could just basically blow off everything and, you know, give this my Grand Theft Auto approach the way, you know, you used to be able to play Grand Theft Auto games before they were like, oh no, we have a story to tell and it's a grand story that is worthy of Oscars and you must experience our story in its fine complexity of all these characters who are assholes that you hate.
Yeah.
You can't play Grand Theft Auto games just openly anymore. It's got to be the Rockstar way. Mm. But immediately I understood, like, this is, you know, like the Grand Theft Auto 3 experience, except that I've got bows and arrows and magic spells instead of a submachine gun and a tank, and I'm okay with that. And so at the preview event, I basically just said, I wonder how far I can go in the wrong direction from where it's telling me to go during this preview event. And I set off across the countryside. Like, I think you have to, like, follow someone to a town at the beginning, and they kind of say, like, okay, well, here's what you need to do. And from there, I was just like, I'm just going to go in this direction on the map and see how far I can make it. So in, like, this, you know, 2 or 3 hour preview, I trekked halfway across Skyrim, or maybe more, not knowing what I was doing, and I was just like, this is amazing. I love this. Mm-hmm. And so that was the approach I took when I got the review version and played it on 360, and yeah, just sank a ton of time into it, pretty much never doing anything with the story. Like, I got as far in the story as going up to the mountain and discovering that there are dragons and, like, elders or something. I was like, all right, well, I'm never coming back here again. And basically my goal was to find every point on the map and, like make that point appear, you know, whether it's a cave or a town or an encampment or whatever, and just, like, have seen it all and go through a ton of dungeons and whatever. And I pretty much did that. And then, you know, the expansion came out where I got to go to Morrowind. Is that right? You go to Morrowind? Yeah. And since I was playing as a dark elf, I kind of got into the lore of Elder Scrolls a little bit because of this. And I was like, okay, cool. So I've got a dark elf. So this should be, like, a really great experience for this character. But it wasn't as, like, I think my experience in Morrowind as a dark elf was not radically different than if you played a Nord or something. They were like, oh, what are you doing here? Well, whatever. Go do some stuff. Go kill some people on mushrooms. And, like physically on mushrooms, not taking mushrooms. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I you know, didn't do, like, a blood analysis after I killed them. But, it was great. I had a great time not playing the game the way I was supposed to. I owned an apiary or something for a while. That was fun.
Yeah, I think that there's something about Bethesda RPGs where, especially compared to other open world games that are ostensibly like, you're in this world. I'm like, yeah, but it feels really artificial. Whereas somehow Bethesda RPGs always feel very lived in. Like, the second that I'm in this world taking my first step out, I'm like, wow, this world feels gigantic. I can do anything. And maybe it's because it's in the first person. Maybe because it doesn't have a lot of ambient music. Maybe just because this environmental art is so well done. But Bethesda RPGs just have that little extra something that just really enhances the immersiveness and makes you want to wander.
And then you hit the bugs and you're like, well, so much for my immersion. Why am I flying
through
the sky?
Why am I flying in the air?
It's kind of like, it's a mess. And I think it kind of mirrors the real world in that way, too. Like, everything is just a little unwieldy and out of control.
Right.
And you just kind of don't know what's going to happen. And there's something, like, super appealing about that. There was something super appealing about walking into any houses you shouldn't be going into, you know, even unlocking them. And then something happens, you know, there might be a random quest. And you're like, how did they even know I was going to walk in here? Like, the sheer scale of it all was just incredible. And to me, that was the magic of it, was just, like, never knowing what was going to happen. And there always something would happen. Right. I mean, you never went to a town and nothing happened. There would always be some random weird, like, cultists running around, or somebody's granddad was a vampire or whatever.
Quest, like a multi-quest line that was going to take you down a giant rabbit hole where all of a sudden you're a werewolf now, I guess.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I have so many save games because I would start the game over and over and over and then just amass so many quests in every playthrough that I could never remember what I was actually in the middle of doing. So I would just start over again.
That's what the little point you put on the map are for. You're like, oh, right, I'm supposed to go there. That was my secret, was I just, or not secret, but my approach was, like, I would stick a pin on the map and be like, okay, I'm going there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometimes I would make a beeline, and sometimes I'd get distracted. I'd be like, I was going that way, but look, there's a cave. What's in there?
Right.
Ooh, Dwemer, dwarves, gold, robots. It's great.
Yeah, the last time I started playing, I was going to do what Ray did, which was just beeline through the story. Like, I was determined this time I'm not going to get distracted. I think it's kind of impossible to do.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'll just do that one thing over there.
And then I went the other way. Get distracted first, and then get undistracted.
I did not follow the actual storyline very much. Mostly I was just trying to figure out how to build myself up in the world. So I was like, I don't feel like going through the main quest line. Oh, like there's this giant magic college. Interesting. And then eventually I completed that quest line. And now I'm the dean of this this college. And I'm basically Dumbledore. And I have my cool like room with all the magic. And I'm like, dope. This is awesome. Oh, and my magic wand. That wasn't very good. But I digress. And you can break the progression. Because there are quest lines that you are clearly not supposed to get to until much, much later. Mm. And yet, like, I was doing them really early on because I was just kind of stumbling upon them. Oh, this seems interesting. And Skyrim's difficulty seems to balance itself around the possibility that you're just going to stumble across these quest lines. And so, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I seem to recall it had kind of a dynamic difficulty where it would scale along with your character because, you know, I would find ruins, and it always seemed like they were kind of on par with where I was, even though I wasn't following the storyline or going in any particular order. So I think the game does kind of balance itself according to your skill level. Although the specialty that I picked, not from any real strategy, but just because I was like, this seems like an appealing way to go, was pretty much game-breaking. So everything at some point was just way too easy because I was like, well, I like ranged attacks. So I'm going to specialize in bow and arrow, and I like sneaking around and avoiding combat. So I'm going to pick stealth. And eventually, you know, you get to a point where you get like perks for attacking from stealth. And when you have a ranged weapon, you can attack basically anyone, anywhere from stealth. And, you know, you get perks where your stealth is so good that basically you hunker down in front of someone and they're like, where'd they go? So I was like, I would go up and battle dragons and basically just be crouched the whole time, shooting them pretty much point blank and doing like triple damage. And, you know, it got to a point where nothing could hurt me. And I felt okay with that. I was like, you know what? I get to be this awesome. I deserve it.
I mean, yeah, Skyrim is the definition of a power fantasy, right? It's like, you're in charge of everything. Also, you're the Dragonborn. Also, you're basically untouchable, whatever. And a lot of Bethesda ostensibly fans will complain constantly about how Skyrim was where the series got uber casual, especially compared to Morrowind and Oblivion, because it's like, oh yeah, I can have the magic in one hand, I can have the sword in the other, and I can have a bow.
And also a dragon shot.
And the definition of Skyrim is sitting up in a rafters, shooting at, plinking a boss with your bow until they eventually die, even though they're ostensibly like 20 levels above you. Whatever. Who cares? Yeah. It worked because Skyrim is probably one of their most successful games ever.
I would say it probably is their most successful game ever, yeah. Especially after you consider how many platforms it's been on.
Right.
But I mean, there's a reason they keep bringing it to all those platforms, and it's because people loved it. I mean, that game, it was just the right game at the right time. I mean, you have to take into account the whole Game of Thrones thing, which was absolutely not planned.
How one year was... 1 year after Game of Thrones started. Or right. No, the year Game of Thrones started.
I mean, basically the game came out right as the first season ended.
It was, yes.
So that season is so focused around the Northmen and, you know, Sean Bean's character, Ned Stark. And, you know, it ends with Ned being killed, basically. And so everyone was like, whoa, where does the story go from here?
Spoiler alert, Jeremy.
Yeah,
right. Oh, my God.
Game of Thrones spoilers.
Well, we haven't done the Game of Thrones episode yet because there's so many good games based on that. But, you know, basically everyone was like, it was kind of peak enthusiasm for Game of Thrones. It had just started. People were like, what is this? It's so rich and detailed. And the acting is good, and the environment is interesting, and there's spooky stuff happening in the background that I don't understand, and they're not really focusing on it because there's all this medieval drama, and the guy I thought was the hero got his head cut off, and I don't know what's going to happen next. And here is a game that basically perfectly channels that in video game form all the way down to, like, the Civil War, you know?
And even starting off with almost getting your head chopped off.
Yeah, exactly. And you know that wasn't planned. Like, this game was in development for years, and sure, they read, you know, a Song of Ice and Fire, which had been out in the 90s, but surely they could not have known that they were going to release this game that had been in development probably since 2004, 2005, right as Game of Thrones hit, and people went crazy for this fantasy series that shouldn't have been a success, but somehow magically kind of defied the odds and became this big cult phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the Elder Scrolls II themselves, it just sort of, with every new game, you know, the momentum was kind of building and the popularity was building. I mean, Oblivion was pretty huge, too. Mm-hmm. The first one that I played was also the first one I covered for CGW, which was Daggerfall. And, you know, at that time, it must have been Scorpia who reviewed it, not me. But, like, I remember, like, we had trouble even just getting people to, you know, to want to review it or to play it. It just wasn't that popular back then, and it was so buggy. You know, it was such a mess that it... No one would have believed you at the time that Daggerfall came out that Skyrim would have the success that it did later. I mean, it was such a niche, hardcore PC RPG title that was buggy. I mean, you could play plenty of other, you know, big PC RPGs and have a far less obnoxious experience in terms of the thing crashing every 2 minutes.
But were there any other PC RPGs as big as Daggerfall? I mean, that the whole thing about that was like...
From a scale
We made a game as big as the United Kingdom.
Right.
There's like this much instance content, and then the rest of it is dynamically generated,
right,
and go wander forever.
Yeah, no, there wasn't. I mean, you know, you had these series that were, you know, that had huge worlds, the Ultima series and Might and Magic and Wizardry, but they were much more focused experiences with linear dungeons and, well, I guess Elder Scrolls has those too. But yeah, it's like you said, I mean, it was just the sprawl of the land was the appeal of Daggerfall. In fact, with Daggerfall, I did the same thing that you did with Skyrim, which is I went in the first time and I remember reading, they said, like, we've got so many square miles in our game. And, like, that's all I did was I just ran from one end, like, as far as I could go. I think I spent, like, a whole day at CGW just doing that, just to see what would happen. And nothing happened.
Yeah, I've heard that game is very sparse. I've never played it, but it's just, like, they kind of overdid it and basically made a whole lot of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Skyrim is actually basically the size physically of San Francisco. It's like 7 miles by 7 miles exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like you could conceivably, you know, there's a race from one side of San Francisco to another that happens every year, Beta Breakers. And like, that was the inspiration for the great Skyrim race that I did as a live stream with Terry Nguyen. The two of us got onto, you know, a streaming platform. I don't even know what it was at that point.
Justin TV.
I think it might have been Justin TV.
Gosh,
yeah.
Wow.
This was 2011, 2012. And basically we both started on one side of the map and said, our destination is this point. So the two of us streamed simultaneously playing together in the 1UP offices to see who could make it there first. And I came in just after Terry. He beat me just a little bit because I stumbled and got lost somewhere on a mountain ridge someplace and fell behind. But it was fun. It was like an hour and a half, 2 hour stream. Just two guys with their existing Elder Scrolls characters dashing across the countryside to see what would happen. And it's great that the game allowed that kind of nonsense. I feel like, you know, we kind of did like a games done quick sort of thing before that even existed. You know, we never followed up on it. I'm not taking credit for inventing anything. It was just like that. It just felt intuitive to do some sort of goofy stunt like that with a game this open-ended. And it was fun. Like this, you know, I don't remember how many people watched the stream, but it had decent engagement for, you know, a stream that early. And at the very least, it was fun. You know, it was something for me and Terry to put our heads together and basically kill some time at the office doing something we both enjoyed.
It's just kind of mind-boggling, the scope of the thing. Mm. Like when you start really paying attention and you start looking at, like, reading any of the gazillion books in there, you're like, how many, like, you know, people hours went into the creation of this thing? Like, just the lore alone. Mm. Like, who wrote all those books?
Yeah.
You know, I always wonder about that, you know, and like, how do they feel, like, knowing that, like, 99% of the people never read past the first page,
yes,
you know? Like, it's a lot of effort for something.
Oh, I read a bunch of those books. I collected a library.
Did you read the whole thing?
The whole what?
Like, were you reading whole books?
Yeah.
That's
wild. I mean, it was there. I was like, it's not that, like, the books are that long. They're like three or four pages of text at the most. But, you know, the naughty what's-her-face maid or whatever, like, all that stuff. About the lore of the world. There's some really weird stuff in there, like... There's, I can't remember the character's name. It starts with a V, but apparently he's like an ascended emperor type character who basically became aware that he was a video game character.
Really?
Like, the cosmology of it is that Like, he transcends the world of the Elder Scrolls by realizing that he is a fictional character in a video game. And that's part of the, like, the actual lore of the Elder Scrolls. It's really, really wild. Like I said, I got really interested in just, like, it's just clear that there's so much history behind this franchise. And I'd seen bits and pieces of Morrowind and of Oblivion, but I never really played them and never really had a desire to go back and play them after Skyrim because, you know, a lot of quality of life improvements happened along the way. But, you know, I was intrigued by all the history that was represented in these books, especially. And, you know, the fact that there was thousands of years of kind of development and lore presented in Skyrim, and I wanted to know more about it. So thankfully there's, you know, like Elder Scrolls wikis and stuff that just have all this text presented. So for a few months, my bus rides and train rides to work would just be like me on my phone, like scrolling through the Elder Scrolls library on the wikis and reading and like trying to understand more about the background of all this stuff.
The Elder Scrolls is kind of the example of a bunch of nerds having a long-running D&D campaign, and they're going, why don't we make our own game and our own world? And it's going to be like D&D, but we're going to put our own personal stamp on it. And that's how you end up getting the Elder Scrolls. And they're like, let's layer in lots of lore. And then it just builds up and builds up for the next 10 years or so. So, yeah, no, that's how Elder Scrolls Arena basically got started. Like, so many RPGs of that era, it was D&D campaign writ large.
Yeah, it basically took over for what's the anime?
Record of Lodoss War?
Yes, Record of Lodoss War as like the ascended D&D campaign. Like Elder Scrolls definitely trumps it. It's the lusty Argonian maid, that's it.
Yes.
Someone's gonna write in about that. I just want to correct myself. Khajiit apologizes.
Skyrim, the region itself, hits just right. So I think a lot about like why this game in particular grabbed people to an extent, because you see a lot of Elder Scrolls fans complain about Skyrim being kind of more generic than something like Morrowind, which had, you know, the mushroom trees and everything. And first of all, the opening is really strong. Like, people like to talk about the cliche of the Bethesda game opening with you being a prisoner or whatever, but you're riding on the cart. It's very cinematic, and then the dragon attacks, and you're like, oh my god, this is so intense, I'm like so into this immediately. And then when you finally escape and everything, the whole world stretches out before you, and you're just kind of staggering into this town. And it really expertly moves you from point to point till you're actually fighting a dragon. And the dragon fights were really impressive at the time, because like that was the big thing, right? It's like they added in the dragons. The dragons could just show up. Now they're attacking a village. Maybe the villagers are going to go and fight the dragons. And it looks a little robotic at times when all the villagers suddenly go in and start attacking. But the effect of seeing a dragon suddenly coming in with the sound effects in particular and the fire exploding around you, really impressive. And I think that's what grabbed people and grounded them in this world.
Yeah, and I always felt bad when the villagers went out to, like, you know, attack the dragon and they just got wiped out. There was permanence to that. Like, if a character, an NPC in towns dies, that's it for them. They're gone. They're not part of your game anymore.
Right, like your horse.
I
killed a lot of horses in that game. I mean, my own horses. I know.
But, at least you didn't have to spend any money on horse armor for this one.
No. Well, it would be because I would be trying to get from point A to B, and I would eventually hit like a you know, some sort of sudden drop, and I would just say, yeah, I'm just going to go for it with the horse.
Do the
horse
Mario would never World Yoshi thing. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, drop Yoshi into a pit and jump off his
pretty
back.
Pretty much, so yeah.
Another moment that was really cool was when you're climbing the mountain for the first time, and the blizzard is all around you. And you get to the top and you meet the Elder Dragon and everything. And that to me was like, okay, I'm in on this. This is like really cool, right? And, you know, I'm from the Great North. So like snow is always going to grab me in a way that it's not going to grab other people. But like, I think it inaugurated a 10-year period where lots of games wanted to be like, no, we're going to have snow. Snow and mountains, right?
It's the easiest particle effect.
Exactly.
I think another thing that really kind of helped Skyrim succeed, aside from the fact that it did have all the quality of life improvements and just felt less janky in a lot of ways from the outset than, you know, like Oblivion or something. It didn't have that ugliness to it that Oblivion had for sure. Was the fact that there were so many games kind of doing the open world thing right around that time. It was really sort of, that was the moment. Like, you had Assassin's Creed in 2007, and that kind of came into its own around 2010 or so, and really, like, that's when the sequels started to get good, before they burned themselves out and became bad again. But you had Dark Souls, you had Batman Arkham City, just a whole lot of games happening all at the same time. You had,
pretty sure,
you
know,
the
Witcher
following
2.
Year, you had Nintendo try to do open world with Skyward Sword, but not really.
No, Skyward Sword was like the opposite of open world. Yeah. It was very discrete instances, almost.
Well, I mean, I think Skyrim had a big impact on Breath of the Wild, because Aonuma said, like, we released this game that had Sky in the title, and there was another game that had Sky in the title, and it just destroyed us. Like, it demolished us. Everyone loved it, and they hated our game. So we spent some time with it, and we wanted to see what they did. And so you get Breath of the Wild, which is basically Skyrim, you know, in Hyrule.
This is a moment where RPGs, after being kind of a niche genre at this point, were really starting to make a comeback. And I think Skyrim was really pushing this forward in particular. And then it would keep going from there.
I think at the same time, you also had stuff like the BioWare games really kind of hitting their stride. You had, you know...
It was like Mass Effect 2 had come out the year before.
Yeah, you had... You kind of saw that start really with KOTOR. And people were like, wow, cool, sci-fi fantasy Star Wars, but open, you know, kind of open, and my choices matter. And then you had Mass Effect come out. I guess Jade Empire, if you want to count that too. And then Mass Effect 2 kind of started to push away from that sort of RPG-ish open design. And... you know, a lot of people missed that. They you know, enjoyed Mass Effect 2, but were like, well, this isn't really, you know, that much like KOTOR anymore. And here was a game that did have that kind of open RPG, do-your-own-thing vibe, but without the obvious morality meters. It was more like, just, you can do stuff. You can join the Rebellion, or you can join the Empire and suppress the Rebellion. You can become a vampire, or you can hunt vampires. You can become a werewolf, or you can fight against the werewolves. You know, it's... like, you had a lot of choices, and they were more organic. It wasn't like, well, I pushed down left on the dialogue wheel, so now, you know, I'm following this path. It was just like, what sounds more interesting? Yeah, I think it would be kind of cool to be a vampire, even if I can't play during the daytime anymore. I'm going to try that.
Being a vampire in Skyrim is kind of awful, though.
Yeah.
Like, you're ugly, you have a lot of, like, problems, and like, I don't want to be a vampire, come on. Why is it so bad to be a vampire?
I mean, my character was already ugly from the start, so...
They released a whole expansion with a whole vampire, like, quest and everything, and still, being a vampire wasn't that great. Like, you mostly wanted to try and cure vampirism. Boo. I wanted to be a hot, sexy vampire.
Yeah, you have Twilight around the same time, though.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they better fix that in 6.
I don't think you can overstate the influence of Fallout 3 as well.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Which is where, like you said, like, Oblivion was a big deal, because that was, like, one of the first big Xbox 360 console exclusives when it came out. But then when Fallout 3 came out in 2008, that, like, was the next step for so many people were into that in 2008.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And that probably introduced a lot of people to Bethesda's style.
Yeah, the very conceit of having an open world that you can explore and everything. So I think that naturally, all the Fallout 3 people were like, wow, I want to do fantasy. I want to do dragons. Come on, Skyrim, let's go.
The idea that one of their games would be that big of a mainstream hit was just, like, kind of inconceivable, like, in the mid-late 90s. I mean, I remember thinking, you know, often, like, of all the companies to, like, hit it so big, I never would have predicted it would have been Bethesda back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, when we went to visit their office in Bethesda for Morrowind, you know, they just seemed like scrappy, like another just hardcore PC that was going, they were going to have their fans and people were going to be super into them. Yeah. But, like, that's all it was going to be. But they seemed happy in that as well. Like, you know, it's a humble group of people. To this day, they're still that way. You know, those of us, you know, Pete Hines and Todd Howard, those guys, like, you would never know, like, the kind of success they've had just by talking to them, because they're so humble about their achievements. And I think it comes from that start, from having really been, I mean, they were just a niche within a niche.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't their first game that Terminator game? Like the open world Terminator game on PC in 1988 or so.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a long way to go, but I mean, that's about as like hardcore nerd as you get, is making a game about the Terminator, you know, in the kind of interregnum between Terminator and Terminator 2. Like Terminator 2 wasn't on the radar at that point. No one knew that was going to be the game to like, or the film to just blow the doors off and reinvent special effects and reinvent action movies. It was like, oh yeah, here's this movie from, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago, and we made a big open world game where you just kind of run around and, you know, try to avoid the Terminator and stop the world from ending at your own pace, as Kyle Reese.
Right.
And Daggerfall, when it came out, was really kind of the nadir in many ways of also of that era of PC RPGs, because we were just, I think we're a little bit away from the release of Fallout and the Black Isle, like, mini renaissance.
I think that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so at the time, it just seemed like such an artifact of the 80s,
right?
Where they were going, yeah, we have all the openness of these wonderful 80s RPGs like Ultima and whatnot. And
right.
Like, yeah, that's great. That was from the freaking 80s.
Right.
This is the 90s. We're playing Warcraft 2.
Right. Warcraft 2, Doom. I mean, there were other things going on in PC gaming that had nothing to do with what Bethesda was up to. And then they were trying to, after Daggerfall, they were trying to, like, figure out other genres they could possibly go into, right? They had those Elder Scrolls spin-off games. It was Battle Spire. Mm-hmm. They were trying to do multiplayer there. They had Redguard, I think it was called, which was like an action-adventure on, like, a piratey island, you know? So they were just sort of, like, trying to figure things out. Like, it just did not seem like they were on the trajectory that would end them in the place where they are right now, which is insane.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you count for that. It feels like Bethesda has never really been a huge company in terms of internal development. I mean, they're huge now in the sense that they own, God, they own Doom, they own Wolfenstein,
Arcane
they
Studios.
Own Arcane, yeah, Prey, and the stabby game with the assassins. Dishonored.
Yeah. Yes.
The stabby game, come on, guys.
Stabby game.
Follow me.
Keep up with me.
But yeah, they own so much stuff, but at the same time, they're like, oh yeah, Elder Scrolls 6, that's probably still a ways away because we just don't have enough of a development team to make that.
I mean, that game's in pre-production. Like, they're focused on Starfield, like, right, squarely.
Right, but I mean, this is a company that I think deliberately keeps its staffing to a modest size, kind of like Epic does, where they just, they have all the money in the world, and they could just, you know, expand. They could just explode if they wanted to, and you know, have,
they could put it out in
satellite studios
every year.
Yeah, they could absolutely annualize this and do, you know, the Ubisoft approach where they have like 7 studios in different countries around the world, all creating components to go into this machine of a video game franchise. But they don't do that. It feels like they really want to handcraft each thing they do for better and for worse. You know, it'd be nice if they would hire more people who could go in and kick the tires and keep the crazy glitches from happening. But at the same time, their games are so big and ambitious. How do you possibly playtest every instance of Skyrim? Like,
their games are really broken.
They are busted for sure.
I already mentioned the memory leak in the PS3 version, and there was a point where you go, this is unplayable. Like Fallout 4 in particular, and they were using really old engines at a certain point, and you're like, please God, please upgrade your engine.
Yeah.
They may
Frostbite
still,
at least.
Who knows what's still in those engines?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely like for them to have more on the QA testing, for sure. Like, staff up there, please. But
it's,
I don't
never
know,
hurt
like,
them.
It hasn't. I mean, it just, well, Fallout 76, maybe.
Fallout 76 was, actually broken.
Yeah.
Like, there is a point at which they have to say, oops, can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, maybe that was their wake-up call to kind of dial it back a little bit. I don't want them to stop like to cut back on the ambition of their games and just the amount of stuff you can do, but just I would love to see the sequel to Skyrim be more stable as you play. I mean, I played on 360, so I didn't have the memory leak, but nevertheless, like, I did so much in that world and changed so much. Like, the save file started taking forever to save and load, you know, stuff started having a little bit of trouble, like, remaining instanced. You know, the game got a little overwhelmed by how much I was doing. It was just too much for the 360 architecture. And when you consider that, you know, this was the same platform that launched with Oblivion, basically, like, you have, you know, kind of the two extremes of the platform's life, and you can see some big improvements, but yeah, also a lot of issues. I mean, I got to a point where there was one quest line, we were trying to find like 7 or 8 artifacts or something, and I couldn't complete it because I got to this one place where I was supposed to open up a door that would let me fight a boss and take the artifact, and that door just bugged, like it wouldn't work for me, and I was like, well, okay, I'm like 6 artifacts into this, but I guess I'm done because there's no way I'm getting through here. You know, on 360, you can't just like hack your save file or mod it or whatever. You just kind of have to roll with it. So,
yeah, it's amazing that they have so much goodwill and that their games have so much goodwill, given how broken they always are. It's like they break so many rules and yet they somehow get away with it.
You know? I think it's because there just aren't that many games like it. Even a game like Witcher 3, which is superficially somewhat similar aesthetically and the way you play it, is just also very different. Because Witcher 3 in its own way is very story-driven, very linear. You're meant to get to the end. It's all about the choices that you're making. Whereas Skyrim is like, yeah, do whatever you want. Have a good time. Like, my end game in Skyrim was not finishing the game.
Right.
I didn't even get, like, halfway through the actual story. I did not get to the point where I had to side between the Nords and the Empire. My whole thing was like, I'm going to get married to my werewolf girlfriend and I'm going to buy the biggest house in the Imperial capital. And I did the Imperial side quest where I basically wiped out the Nords on my own. Like, I didn't even get to that point in the story. So I beat the Nords before I even reached that part of the quest.
Yeah.
And then I was like, great, now I can go buy my house. Like, that's all I wanted to do. But that felt like an endgame to me. I was making my own story, right?
Yeah.
Like, that is the beauty of the Bethesda games, is that you are crafting your own narrative. You are crafting your own story. And that ultimately is what I think a lot of people want out of a particular RPG.
It's like a lifestyle rather than a... Yeah.
You're not just playing through the story that has been prescribed for you.
Right. I mean, we've all kind of said, like, in a way, like, who gives a shit about the story, right? And the story doesn't add up to a whole lot anyway when you, like, look at it, you know. It's certainly
The problem with Bethesda is that they do actually prescribe... There comes a point where they bottleneck you and say, okay, make a choice. And they did this in Fallout 4 as well, which is really annoying. And the reason people are so into Fallout New Vegas, I think, versus the Bethesda games, is that actually they had many different choices in terms of the faction that you ultimately sided with. So Bethesda's RPGs can be self-sabotaging in that own way. So that's why you could start to go, screw the story. I don't want to be railroaded into a particular choice at a certain point.
Right. Yeah, every time I would get to one of those places, that's when I would start doing a bunch of side quests. Like, I'm not going there yet. Right. Yeah. I don't want to do that thing.
Yeah, I actually did do some of the storylines. I didn't do the main storyline. Like I got to the top of the mountain, met the dragon god or whatever, and was like, neat. Peace out. See you later, Baxon von Sydow. That's great. Glad they spent all this money for dialogue that I'm not going to hear. But then, like, the Civil War storyline, I did that. I was like, well, you know, I don't like empires, but these rebel guys seem kind of racist. So they have to go. I just can't. I got to put them in prison.
Yeah, and
it was me prepping for, you know, 2016 and after, honestly. It was like prepping in life. Oh, sorry, did I make it too real?
No, yeah, I was just flashing on that one. There's one storyline where there's a woman who's like being hunted by guards, and she asks you to rescue her. But then when you go find the guards, they explain to you that, like, basically she's like completely like bullshitted you, and she's actually some like evil witch or something. I mean, there's so many plot lines like that where Like, I never knew who was telling the truth, which side I should actually just join it, or who I should side with, so I just wouldn't side with any of them. I would just leave them all and go do some other part of the game, and leave that whole
sort it out for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to go find, like, the weird magic staff that makes me hallucinate. Like, that's what I want to find.
I enjoyed finding the Dark Brotherhood storyline. And it's such a cool moment where you're sitting in the house and then you look up and you see the assassin sitting on the roof looking down on you under the moonlight. And then you can, like, kill them and not even, like, partake in that quest line.
Right.
Or you can join them and then start going on a whole quest line where you're going, now how am I going to kill this particular target? This is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like they turned Assassin's Creed into just, like, a little mini game within Skyrim.
It was so fun. Like, the various guild quests have historically been the most enjoyable parts of Bethesda's RPGs.
Yeah.
Yeah, people talk about those a lot, but I wasn't too attracted to them. I'm too much of a lone wolf, I suppose, but yeah.
I think one of my playthroughs, I tried to get through the Thieves Guild. That seemed like a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I eventually got my combination of stealth and lockpicking high enough that like I could go into a heavily guarded museum or something where, you know, people were patrolling and, like, crouch down in front of them, lockpick, open up the case, steal a treasure while they're looking at me, which kind of made the Thieves Guild quest a little too easy. Yeah. I was like, all right, well, I'm basically magic now, so...
Start your own guild.
I mean, you are. Like, you speak the dragon voice, and you have all the dragon calls that are super OP.
Yeah, you know, you said earlier that this is kind of the quintessential game where it's like you are pretty much everything. And, you know, that is kind of an option built into the game, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. If you choose to do everything, then yes. It's just the game gives you this buffet of options and things you can do, and it's kind of up to you to figure out, like, what do I want to do? So, yeah, you can just gorge yourself at the buffet, or you can say, like, well, this is the part that interests me. So, you know, I appreciate that freedom. I don't know if canonically, you know, they'll look back at Elder Scrolls 6 and be like, oh, yeah, that Dragonborn person, like, they basically ruled the world for a few years. It was pretty wild. Like, they solved every problem. It was great. Yeah. they'll probably go back in and kind of, you know, like they do with Street Fighter endings and say, well, actually, this character won the Street Fighter tournament that time, even though you can win as one of, like, 20 different characters.
Test 6 is going to be set in, like, the desert, and I'm not looking forward to it. It's not my aesthetic. I mean, that's the theory, because... Oh. There are, like, all of these, like, Easter eggs and hints that it's going to be in Hammerfell or whatever, and I'm like, I don't wanna, but...
I mean, it's been a while since I've really read up on the lore, but my assumption is that the next game is going to involve the... Or, I don't know, based on what, like, fan speculation at the time, is that the next game will involve that one race of elves... that basically wants to end the universe. Mm-hmm. Like, to... Not to end the universe so much as, like, make it so it never happened. They want to basically unmake reality. And you meet them briefly from time to time, and they're kind of pissy at you, but I don't think you necessarily have to fight them. I can't remember what the race is called, but they're just, like, the snootiest elves.
Huh.
But they're part of that kind of, like, weird meta lore, along with... whatever that guy's name is, Victor or whatever. I don't know, it starts with a V. Vivek, maybe?
The Elder Scrolls, that is a hell of a rabbit hole right there to go down in terms of the lore. And there are people who are very invested in it.
Oh, yeah.
I get DMs from them every time I write about the Elder Scrolls now.
I'm looking forward to the comments on this episode. Should be exciting.
Yeah, I wouldn't jump to too many conclusions over, like, the setting of the next one necessarily, because, like, even Skyrim, you know, oh, it looks like a bunch of snow and ice, but it still has some color in it when you go and walk around.
That's
so
true.
I think there'll be plenty of variety in whatever they do next.
Mm-hmm.
So what characters did you play as? Like race, specialization in skills and combat and so forth. Do you remember like what you gravitated toward? We talked a little bit about mine, but I don't think anyone else has really talked about like what kind of character they actually played as. Ray, what about you?
I was a Nord. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay, well, I usually stick to pretty plain stuff, like sort of warrior type stuff, but I like playing as Red Guards. It's like playing as that race a long time. But yeah, I'm usually not a magic playing class to begin with, so I usually enjoy melee combat if I have to do it. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
kind of the same for me.
Yeah.
And I played a Nord in that game because in their games I always want to play the race of like wherever I'm supposed to, you know, it was set there, so I wanted to be from there.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
I don't want to be a foreigner. I wanted to be a native.
I did the foreigner thing, and everyone treated me like one. So that was
right.
That was actually a different experience, you know, having lived in America as a straight white man all my life. Like,
yeah.
You don't really get that kind of treatment here. So when you get that in a video game, obviously it's not analogous to real world like experiences, but it still is, you know, it is a little jarring and different to have everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people just kind of automatically take a dislike to you because of the color of your skin or the shape of your ears, I guess, color of your eyes.
That's something that Bethesda does pretty well, I think, actually, when it comes to their individual characters. Like, if you pick a dark elf, you will be treated like a dark elf.
Yeah, I mean, I specifically picked a character that I thought, well, this seems the least like, you know, the sort of character you would see here in the snowy Northlands.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try out this dark elf thing. So it seems interesting. And yeah, so I think probably I heard a lot of different dialogue than you did, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Did they ever comment on your breath? Do you remember?
That I don't remember, but it was... They kind of have to walk a line with the dialogue in the game. Like, they can't be too overtly horrible or it stops being
right.
fun and starts being kind of gross. I don't remember exactly what was said, but it was always just kind of like a sort of belittling, like, oh, are you lost or something? Or what are you doing
right,
here?
Right.
Yeah. And I think the lore in Elder Scrolls, which I didn't realize at the time, is that the Dark Elves were pretty much, not wiped out, but greatly reduced in numbers after Morrowind.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone was, you know, if they didn't immediately take a dislike to me, they were like, oh, weird, a Dark Elf here? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I played the generic Skyrim character, which is to say I played with magic in one hand, sword in the other,
yeah.
using a bow, shooting people from a distance, being able to stealth snipe everybody. I was playing as a Nord, though initially I think I started with a Khajiit character because, of course, playing as a cat. And I think that you can honestly...
Too on the nose, cat.
Yeah. I think that you can definitely tell a person's personality based on which character they start out with in a game like Skyrim. And it's like, oh, you picked the Khajiit. That's a very specific choice on your part.
Yeah.
But my main playthrough ultimately ended up being as a Nord. But when I was playing as a Nord, I ended up siding with the Empire for various reasons, I guess. Mostly because I wanted to live in that big, cool city. And so I went through that entire quest line.
Sold out your people.
Seriously.
I can't believe it. Wow.
I remember going into the Hall of the Nords and trying to kill the leaders of the Nords, but they were invincible, which was super annoying because I was like, oh, because that's one thing that people get really frustrated with is they're like, I want to be able to go and kill everybody. I don't care if I end up blocking the quest line, but no. Bethesda,
I don't know. If someone can kill Lord British, there's got to be a way to kill the Nords.
Exactly. But if you get to a certain point where you're helping out the Empire, you can kill the leaders of the Nords. And I killed them before I got to that part of the story as well.
Yeah.
So I was going running through the Nord capital, looting and pillaging and burning. And I was like, great. And then I went and did the Lycanthrope quest line, met my werewolf girlfriend, got married, had adopted a couple
of
kids.
Keeps coming back to werewolf girlfriend.
Aelia the Huntress, I believe
okay.
is her name.
Was she a werewolf? I remember liking her as a character.
Yeah, she was great.
I would have done the wedded bliss thing with her, but I ultimately was very boring and ended up marrying Lydia. Because I think like 90% of people end up marrying Lydia just because she's the loyal companion from the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, I'll give you a ring. Why not? I'll put a ring on it. We adopted some kids.
The werewolf quest was quite fun as well, I should add, because like there's this whole sequence where you're becoming the werewolf for the first time and you're experiencing it from a first person point of view. And you're like, whoa, this is like totally dope. So
I actually don't think I did that. I did meet Lydia the Huntress, but I think I might have tried to kill off the werewolves, actually.
Oh, you monster. Killing off my kin.
Sorry about that. You know, I'm a foreigner. What do you expect? I don't appreciate the ways of your people. I don't understand. I'm a stranger in a strange land.
But like once I became a werewolf, like you get all these extra powers from it as well. And I'm like, wow, there's like no downside to being a werewolf.
I was going
to
ask you, there's no downside?
No.
That's why I never did it. I always felt like there had to be a downside.
No, you can be a werewolf.
You get fleas.
The vampire, that's
minus five dexterity for scratching constantly.
The vampire stuff is all downside
right
there. So
I feel like it should be the other way around.
Yeah,
I feel like on the hierarchy of cool fantasy creatures, like vampires are up here and werewolves are kind of like down there. So
Well, it should be more. Yeah, it seems like werewolf would be more like out of control or something. Or
yeah, no.
I don't have anything. I don't have a problem with your girlfriend, by the way.
Oh, thank you. No, I appreciate that.
I'm sure she's very nice. She's one of the good ones.
Oh well.
I'm just leaning into the Nord thing at this point.
But once I got to that point, I was like, yeah, I think that I really enjoyed my time in Skyrim. Anyway, moving on, you know, like I explored that world quite thoroughly. There were many dragons, but there was a certain point where the story stopped carrying much weight for me. It was much more about all of the things that I could find in the actual world. The actual story was like, yeah, there are dragons coming back, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I wrote a few blogs along the way as I was playing about just like random stuff I found in caves. There were, you'd find just little like set pieces in caves that, you know, weren't part of the story. And unless you were actually taking the time to read notes and things like that, you might not have really picked up on things. But like, you know, a part where people were prospecting for gold and there was like this, if you read the notes, you can kind of get a sense of betrayal as the two people are trying to one-up each other and figure out ways to get the gold. And, you know, there's like friends torn apart. And then you look at kind of how their bodies are arranged in the world. And you're like, oh yeah, there's definitely some storytelling, environmental storytelling happening here, which was, you know, still something you didn't see a lot of in video games at that point. I think that's become much more of a common thing at this point, but you know, 10 years ago, it was still kind of novel to come across this thing that's totally like this hidden cove someplace, and you're like, oh, right, something happened here, and there's little hints for it, and it doesn't really affect the game in any way, but it's just something some designer decided to put in this cave and write a story about.
Yeah, I think that's what was so neat about it to me, was that it was just that constant feeling of discovery. What's going to happen if I go in here? I mean, so many other games that have sort of adapted that kind of style, like I'm thinking of Ghost of Tsushima, which had incredible side quests, except you were kind of led there, you know, like I didn't get the same sense of discovery. Like I didn't just stumble across some village and then there was a whole thing, like you kind of ended up there. Whereas in Skyrim, you could just be, like you were saying, just like wandering around in the hills and all of a sudden there's a barrow and that barrow has a whole thing going on here that you would never have come through. I mean, the game would never have told you to go there. You really had to find it.
Yeah, I really feel like this is a game that really, maybe its greatest appeal is that it just nailed that sort of sense of the more you explore, the more you'll find, which a lot of games try for, but it's not always very rewarding. But here, it really did feel like anywhere you go, you're going to find something if you're looking for it. Mm-hmm. But you don't necessarily need that thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, some of the big things, the big storylines are signposted, you know, through dialogue and other things like that. But if you take the time to talk to everyone or read every little scrap of paper or something, you're going to find stuff. And, you know, sometimes there's a whole rabbit hole attached to it and you can go down it. Sometimes it's just a thing that stands alone. It's just, you know, flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, I felt like it was like a really like ultimate form of escapism. I know when I was at the height of playing it, it was the kind of feeling I would want to get from an MMO of like, I'm living in this world, except so many MMOs have so many artificial trappings around leveling and things. And, you know, your list of things you must do. or the things you're trying to do to catch up to your friends or whatever. But but because this was just basically a solo game, you could just go in there and just be like lost for hours and like really make your own story. To me, that was like what I got out of it was what I would have liked to have gotten out of MMOs.
Yeah, that's a great point. I agree with that too. That's why I don't even like MMOs that much.
Because MMOs, when we imagined MMOs back around the release of Ultima Online, we were promised this sandbox where we could affect the world with lots of other people, but it turned out to be much more of a theme park. And the closest that we've ever actually gotten to a true sandbox is maybe EVE Online.
Right.
Well, so, I think Ultima Online had a lot of that.
Ultima Online,
it did back
yeah.
in the day.
But then, you know, no one really followed up on that. They followed up on the juicy, exciting parts as opposed to like the learn to become a master bread baker. Like, you know.
Ultima Online was, let's grind forever and probably somebody's going to kill you and steal all of your stuff. Whereas EVE Online was like, you're going to join a giant alliance that's carving up a giant piece of the universe and insane stuff is happening and people are backstabbing and there's a whole meta component. Or you're just, you know, running a backwater mining station somewhere on the edge of the galaxy. And that's kind of what you're wanting on an MMORPG versus WoW, where it's just like, more content.
WoW is kind of like, you're right, it's kind of like Disneyland. I mean, at the time, WoW solved a lot of like really good problems, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they did an amazing job of streamlining so many things that were shitty, but then so many RPGs or so many MMOs like took the wrong lessons from that, or maybe not the wrong lessons, it's just they copied the same thing over and over, right?
And became worse as they went.
Right. I mean, I went back to WoW not too long ago because I was curious. And the degree to which they handhold you in the extreme, like, it blew me away.
Are you talking Classic WoW?
Not Classic WoW.
Okay. I mean, I was going to say, I thought Classic WoW was pretty much just like...
No, Classic WoW
Go figure it out.
And Classic WoW was considered at the time extremely friendly.
Yes, it was. Right.
Jeff, have I told you about the critically acclaimed MMORPG Final Fantasy XIV?
I've never heard that happen in real life. Wow. Amazing.
Be remiss if we didn't mention the mods in Skyrim,
absolutely.
Which I think has continued to drive its popularity for a very long time. Because whereas Bethesda has not really patched the game, they've really left it to the fans over the years to do it. And the fans have really stepped up. Like, there are so many graphical improvements. Mm-hmm. People have added weather systems. They've fixed various problems. They make the quests more open. They've added so much armor and everything to the point where you're like, if you're going to play Skyrim, freaking install like 100 mods. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah, I was tempted to replay Skyrim on Switch because I love that system. And, you know, being able to play Switch portably or to play Skyrim portably seems great because I don't necessarily want to sit down for 5 hours at my TV and play. But, you know, doing it in little bite-sized chunks, going through a cave and saying, well, that was good for now. That's great, but you can't mod the Switch version. But, you know, with Steam Deck coming out, maybe that's the way for me to revisit it. Mm-hmm. Like, you get the portability and the modability, and that's... Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that until just this very moment, and I sure am glad I got a pre-order for that.
Yeah.
Oh, you got one, too.
I did. I think early 2022 is when mine's coming.
I think that, and when the Skyrim remastered version came out on PC, it kind of messed up a lot of mods.
Right.
So it actually was very annoying, and I didn't want to upgrade to the new Skyrim.
And
everybody had to rewrite their damn mods.
Yeah, but now all those have their own mods too. The remastered and the special edition have their own mods.
Yeah.
And the number one mod, last time I looked, was basically bug fixes. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's a fan patch,
right.
A giant fan patch,
right?
But yeah, having that kind of open, you know, approach. I mean, it makes sense to me that Bethesda bought id and Doom because Doom was very much a game about like. And Quake, you know, we're very much games about, like, do cool stuff with this engine, make this game better, or make your own game. I mean, that's where we got Half-Life.
Mm-hmm.
So, it does all seem of a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm really captivated by this idea of, portable modded Skyrim now. Like, I think I might have to do that. Like, I'll buy the game a third time. Why the hell not?
Yeah.
I guess there's no reason the mods wouldn't work, right, on Steam Deck.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Steam Deck is supposed to play any, like, anything that's supported on Steam is supposedly playable on Steam Deck. I'm sure some of the more current games, you know, something running on, like, a high-end Unreal Engine, what is it, 5 now?
It's a totally open platform. You can throw basically anything on it.
Right. I'm sure some of the more high-end stuff is going to struggle. But I feel like last-gen type games...
You know, if you look at their specs, actually the Steam Deck has really solid specs. Like, basically a current-gen GPU, a processor from, like, 2019... Like, it's actually shocking that they hit that price point with the specs that the Steam Deck
I'm sure it's a loss leader.
Here's
your Razer. Please buy all the Blades through Steam.
Yeah.
And I will buy the Blades through Steam.
My day job interviewed Gabe Newell, and he
still exists?
Yes, he's still around. He's back from New Zealand on his vacation there.
What do you have to say about Half-Life 3?
God.
But he... when it came to the Steam Deck, he was like, yeah, he called it painful but necessary to hit the price point that they did with the Steam Deck. But yeah, no, Skyrim on the Steam Deck seems like the optimal approach. And then by the time the Steam Deck comes out, Skyrim will be more than a decade old. That's wild. But it still holds up. Still a great game.
It'll probably sell more copies, the Steam Deck. Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who are like going, Kat, why are you so into Bethesda games? Like, what is it about these games that you keep going back to? And I'm just like, I just don't get anything quite like I do when I play like a Skyrim or a Fallout 4. It's just, it's a unique experience. And so that's why I will be day one with Starfield, and I'm going to go live in space with my space vampire girlfriend.
Wait, space vampire?
Yes.
That was space werewolf.
Well, I'm just changing it around. Space werewolf, whatever.
You don't have to change just because of what I said. It was really a joke.
Either way.
I don't have anything against werewolves.
There will definitely be a space werewolf in this game, or a space cat race.
Yeah, you're marrying somebody. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. In my starship, I'm so excited. And that's what Bethesda does, right? They make me feel like I am super invested in this world, and that's ultimately what I want to feel like, is like that I'm stepping into a holodeck.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what you're saying about the appeal of Bethesda games kind of reminds me of the fact that after I sank 150 hours into this game, I kept chasing that high in other places, and so I tried, you know, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, the game paid for by the taxpayers of New England.
Yeah.
Didn't hit it.
Just an action RPG.
Dragon's Dogma actually scratched the itch in a different way. I found that very satisfying. I need to go back and revisit that sometime.
Dragon's Dogma is like almost a hybrid between Dark Souls and Skyrim. It's
it was really kind of widely dismissed before it came out.
I remember.
I played a demo at a Capcom event and was like, this is really good. After everything I've heard about this, I thought it was going to be garbage.
Everybody was making fun of it because at the time, everybody was making fun of Japanese games. And were just roundly ignoring
it. Japan doesn't know how to make games. I forgot about that.
Because this was like 2012.
Yeah.
Mm. And then, like, I remember getting a demo disc because I was doing a preview for OXM or something. And I was like, wait a minute, this is good.
Yeah, I mean,
I really enjoy it.
Well, remember, these days people only play Phil Fish games and nothing from Japan anymore. Yeah, like, I was very shocked by how much I enjoyed the demo and really, really liked that game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I played that on console, Xbox 360, I think, so it was pretty janky. But I think the more recent remakes or you know, re-releases are supposed to be much better, so I'll revisit that again someday. I feel like there were a few other games where I was kind of like, is this going to be it? Oh, no, that's not it. So...
Yeah, I thought the Witcher games, like...
Yes, the Witcher, that's another one.
But not really, though.
But very linear. And, like, when we were talking earlier about Ghost of Tsushima, that is very in the Witcher tradition, where you have these multi-part side quests that are very dense with story and everything, but it very much leads you to that.
Right.
And there is the intention is not to live in the world. The intention is to play out a story.
That's
an epic tale.
That's right. Yeah. And there's no jank. The jank is so key.
Where's the jank? I need the jank.
Everything's too polished, which means it's not like open enough, basically. Yeah.
Right.
I think the closest we've maybe gotten is that one game from the Eastern European studio that's like hyper realistic, and I'm like grasping at the name.
Got to narrow that one down.
I know, yeah,
right?
There's a whole bunch of...
That's... I mean, there are games like Gothic 2 and that kind of thing, but... crap.
Are you talking about... Did it come out in like 2013 or so?
It's like 2018.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, something that more recent.
Yeah. I stopped paying attention to games after I left the press. I don't know.
Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Oh.
Which was somewhat... It had its own baggage in the way that it approached things, but...
Is it like the sequel to Deliverance, the movie?
No.
Oh, it's too bad. an MMO in the American South. Or not MMO, but an open world RPG.
That would be frightening.
That would be weird, but I'm into the idea. Like, you get into New Orleans and, you know, all kinds of weird stuff happens.
Now, Kingdom Come Deliverance is set in Eastern Europe, like in the Middle Ages... And it's basically, what if Skyrim, but hyper-realistic in everything that it does, to the point that it's fairly obnoxious about it, but the people are like, Skyrim isn't realistic enough.
When you eat food, do you have to, like, manually chew the food with a button?
More or less. Yeah. That is effectively what it is. Like, you're probably going to die.
Turn the right stick in a steady rhythm, then press R3 to swallow.
It's quite a tedious game, I will say. But yes, that is, I would say that like games like Kingdom Come, like a lot of developers have been trying to capture Skyrim by going denser, more realistic, more hardcore.
But that's not what people loved about Skyrim. They loved that it was breezy. That's why the Elder Scrolls faithful are like, meh. But I don't want to play a super dense game like that. I want to just kind of cruise around and get my stealth so good I can like stand or crouch actually right, you know, like 2 feet in front of someone and basically flick an arrow between their eyes and kill them and they don't even realize I'm there. That's not realistic. It's stupid, but it's, you know, it's satisfying. It's fun. It's like I put a lot of time into leveling this up little bit by little bit. I deserve this. I deserve to be a murder machine at point blank range. earned this.
They're going for... They want a holodeck experience where it's like, I am so totally immersed in this world. Everything I can do it. But what Bethesda is doing with their games is, even though it's not functionally uber realistic, it's just close enough that you feel like you have a lot of agency in the world, even if it is somewhat artificial at times.
They're proud enough to stand up and say, I am not a merry man.
Has anyone else tried Skyrim VR?
No.
That game made me sick.
It's very good at getting you sick, yeah.
Huh. Is it the same game?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Just walk around in it.
I don't want to stick my face into that kind of jank. I don't know.
Well, actually, it might even be jankier because they have to turn down the image quality, at least on PS4 they did. But yeah, I tried to like it, but yeah, it gets me sick more than any other VR game, which is too bad, but...
You're putting on a headset and spending multiple hours in it, and within 10 minutes, I want to die
when I'm in a VR
headset.
Yeah, they need better headsets, for one thing. Need more air-conditioned headsets.
Well, maybe like an Oculus Quest isn't so bad. I don't know if you can put Skyrim VR in one of those, but like they're much more lightweight.
Yeah, right. You can at least play the PC version through it. Yeah.
That's amazing they put that whole game in VR.
That was Bethesda for a year there. They were like, let's put everything in VR.
You know, they put Doom in there as well.
Yeah. No, thanks.
I mean, Doom 3
like modern
initially.
Doom or the original Doom?
Well, there was Doom 3 and like kicked off the prototype Oculus back in the day. But I remember there was an E3 where they had both Skyrim and a Doom.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The Doom one is a spinoff of 2016 Doom.
There were a couple of E3s that were really like VR. It was either VR or it was like 3D... TV.
Because there was a lot of...
All those frickin' demos we had to sit through of shit that never mattered.
Where you were wearing 3D glasses?
Yeah.
That was the worst. God.
I forget what year that was.
That was those like press conferences where everybody had to put on the glasses.
Yeah, I'm glad we got past that.
Me too.
I'm glad Nintendo was like, 3DS, now here's the 2DS. This is the one you really wanted.
I like the 3DS. Of all the 3D stuff that happened around video games, I thought the 3DS did it better than anybody.
I remember talking to you about the 3DS demos at E3 the year before they came out, and both of us agreed, like, oh, this is legit.
Yeah.
I'm cool with this. But still, I'm happy to have moved away from that.
No, me too.
I'm surprised they never got Skyrim on the 3DS. It seems like something they might have tried.
Well, they barely got Oblivion on PSP.
Yeah,
did they? Oh, God, they did that. No, they were trying.
No, it was Elder Scrolls Travels was what they were supposed to do.
It was unreleased.
But there was a demo. Yeah, there was a demo.
There's prototypes out there.
Prototypes.
There okay. I'll have to check those out. I guess.
You don't have to. You don't have to.
I'm curious. I mean, they did get an Elder Scrolls game on Engage, so anything's possible.
Yeah.
Did they
really?
Yeah. Which one was that? It was just like...
It must have been
Elder Scrolls. Was that the first Elder Scrolls Travels? Was that going to be a series? Yeah.
Engage.
Yeah. There was a lot of weird stuff on Engage. Like, Nokia put a lot of money into luring people to develop games for their platform, and people were like, okay, sure, we'll take your money and do this, and then we're done. So it's a wasteland of really interesting things that never should have happened. But it's kind of cool that they did. My boss at Limited Run Games is trying to talk me into doing Engage Works and cover the Engage library. He's like, yeah, I'm working on collecting this. So when you decide to do that, you can borrow my library. I'm like,
Engage.
No, why would I do that to myself? My life's too precious.
The legend of the taco stop. Phone.
Yes,
no,
exactly.
It's only like a 20-minute video. Don't be so complaining.
Every game deserves a 20-minute video. So about Skyrim, actually, you know, we're kind of winding down at this point. I guess maybe the question now would be, given what you've experienced with Skyrim and other Elder Scrolls games, what do you want from Elder Scrolls 6? Did any of you do anything with Elder Scrolls Online?
No.
That was the one, like, you know, I was chasing after that high again.
Yeah.
Chasing the dragon, the Dragonborn, I guess. I still couldn't bring myself to do ESO.
I
dabbled.
When ESO went into the Skyrim expansion, I was like, I'll give it a shot. But it doesn't feel right. There's just something about it that feels off. And I think it's because it's an MMORPG. I know somebody who worked on ESO, and it was just a freaking mess when it came out. And it's actually really impressive, the amount of work that they've done to save that game and make it viable. And it's actually way bigger than anybody like ever thinks about, because it doesn't really have coverage in the mainstream press. It's a very self-contained ecosystem,
right?
But it's huge. It is very successful, and it's a game I never want to play.
I mean, it's not the first RPG that's shipped in a miserable state and has been you know, fought back from oblivion, or maybe from the grave by hard-fought progress. I mean, you love the multiplayer online RPG Final Fantasy 14.
Yes.
And isn't it free to play now, ESO? Is it free to play? I think it is.
Probably.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Somebody it's probably if they're anything like FF14, there's going to be a certain amount of content that's free to play, and then just to get you into it.
So. Yeah, I think it is like that.
Yeah, no, I don't have a huge amount of interest in ESO. As for what I want from Elder Scrolls going forward, I think that there can be a lot done in terms of, so there's the Radiant system, right? And that makes the actual town people have their own kind of like world and like their own thing. And actually, like, Cyberpunk 2077 tried to implement a version of that. It was a complete freaking mess. It was such a bug fest. It was ridiculous. I mean, that game was a bug fest anyway, but even more so with those characters. So I would love to see in TES 6 and Starfield, actually, a much more sophisticated AI in terms of like routines for the characters, so it doesn't feel quite as robotic and it therefore makes the world feel more organic. And then beyond that, I'm really excited about the improvements that they're making to the engine, because Starfield is going to have brand new engines, the Creation Engine 2 or whatever that. And the thing that they were showing at E3 as a teaser trailer, that was all in engine, and it looked really good. It was very, very impressive. So I am ready for a fairly substantial visual overhaul for this series in 2030.
If we're all still alive, then
if we're all still look,
have a great time at Elder Scrolls 6.
I'm going to be like that person wearing the VR headset, sitting in the like dank basement, and be like, I'm in my fantasy world with the dragons and everything. I don't even care anymore.
Fair enough. I'd forgotten about the what was it, Radiant system?
Yeah.
Like, they promised, you know, oh, infinite content. You'll have just infinite quests. They'll just be generated on the fly. But after I got, like, three or four of those, it was just, like, the same Mad Lib letter, like, saying, a person has done a thing. Please go and murder them. Yeah. And that was it. I was like, well, okay. So there's not actually any real content to this. It's just exactly. Filler.
Well, we're like a ways off. Yeah, doing the Radiance quests in Skyrim was very boring. It was like very simple fetch quests. But my hope is that in like 10, 15 years, algorithmically generated AI and like all that jazz will result in AI complex enough that we're effectively getting organic quests spun out in real time. And that would be fascinating in an RPG like Skyrim.
Yeah, I think all I want is for them not to follow anybody else. I want them to keep doing their thing. You know, I don't want them to adapt any trends going on. I don't want them to get better about onboarding. You know, a lot of the things that I do in my day job about, like, you have to help people get it, understand what your game is about. Like, I don't want that for Bethesda. I don't want Elder Scrolls 6 to have, like, 3 hours where they teach everybody how to do everything. Yeah. Like, it should just be, like, good luck.
Yeah.
They kind of do that, like Skyrim versus, you know, Oblivion or Morrowind. It's way more accessible than either of those.
It is.
But it doesn't, it still at the same time doesn't feel like tutorials. It doesn't feel like, you know, Skyward Sword. I mean, that was kind of the big difference. I'm sure that Nintendo discovered was like, oh, Skyrim just kind of drops you into this thing and you don't have a sword telling you, like, what every action you should take should be every 5 minutes. And it makes a huge difference. Like, you just go out there and do stuff, and you get to make mistakes yourself or figure things out yourself. And when you figure out how to, you know, like find a really quick way to master forging or something and level up, you feel like you've figured something out, like you've kind of cheated the game, even though, you know, the system is actually pretty simple and baked in. But, you know, there is that process of discovery. I agree. Like, I really appreciate that. And you kind of compare notes with other people who played Skyrim going in blind and realize, oh, we all kind of did a lot of the same things and figured out a lot of the same exploits, but it feels like you're discovering something, like you're coming up with these ideas on your own. And that's a rare feat in video games, to make you feel like, oh, I did something and maybe I wasn't supposed to do it, but I figured this out.
Yeah, and it was neat too to just like stumble across a town and get a feeling like this is a town, or like this place has a personality that's different than this other place that I just visited, or there's some whole soap opera going on in here that if I walk by I hear pieces of it, and I could get involved if I want to, but I don't necessarily have to. But it feels like stuff is happening off screen, right? That I don't know, there's something just, that's what I want them to keep, just this sort of unwieldy openness to it, you know. I don't want them to get more professional. I want it to have bugs.
The bugs are the selling point. That's part of the charm.
Exactly. I want it to be a feature. I want the bugs to be a feature, not a bug.
I mean, for me, the bugs just mean that they've, you know, their reach has exceeded their grasp.
Exactly.
And that's not a bad thing all the time.
Right. Like,
when there's so much being reached for, and, you know, what they do manage to grasp is so enjoyable and just so, like, you know, make your own fun, then that's great.
They do seem to get away with more than anybody else, though, so I shouldn't be enabling them. I shouldn't be saying, please have bugs.
I think Fallout 76 was kind of a come-to-Jesus moment.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think they've kind of figured out what's the threshold. What can we get away with? Let's stop maybe a little short of that next time.
It gets to a point where it's just not fun anymore. You're like, okay, this game is so legitimately broken that it is an absolute bear to play. Why am I even wasting my time with this? So, but Fallout 76, the other problem was, whereas Skyrim just felt like full of stuff to do, Fallout 76 did not feel like that at all. There was nothing to do. There were no people. There were no NPCs. And they're like, go hang out with other people. I don't know. And then people are like, there's nothing in this world. Why would I hang out? Oh, and by the way, it's broken. And Bethesda was like, did this wrong.
Interesting. Yeah, any game that just says make your own fun and you know, we didn't provide any, you know, is going to be suspect. I mean, Sims Online tried to do that too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we were, you know, there's not going to be, we're not putting the game in, you're going to make your own games. Like, well, most people just aren't that creative.
Yeah, Minecraft got away with that, but that's about it. It's you know, it's like a once in a generation thing.
Yeah,
if that, once in a decade, once
the
in a
difference between Minecraft though was that like you could dig up the world, you could create basically it's Legos, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Fallout 76 was very simple. Like you were just kind of crafting stuff and it was like to what end?
Right.
There is no end.
There was no end.
Yeah. Well, you know, Minecraft crafting was the basis of everything as opposed to like, oh, we should put that in because why not? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Ray, what about you?
Well, let's see. I think a basic thing I would like from the next game would just be a world that's a bit more funky, because I'm one of the old Morrowind fans, and Morrowind has a lot of varied terrain, let's say.
You need more cliff racers, is what you're saying.
Less. No, many fewer cliff racers. That's why I don't like the dragons in Skyrim. Too much drama about things in the sky. But yeah.
Less drama. Less excitement.
Less drama.
More terrestrial drama, please.
Yeah. So yeah, just something a bit more colorful in that sense, a bit more funky, mushroomy type landscapes, I think, would be cool to see.
Yeah, I would really like to see Elder Scrolls 6 explore some of the weirder lands, like where the Argonians are from or the Khajiit.
Right.
Like, go strange. I'm tired of like white people from Europe. Like, we've seen a lot of their kingdoms already.
We've seen enough of them.
If it's Hammerfell, I think you'll be okay on that front.
What is Hammerfell?
Hammerfell's like a desert, and I think the Red Guard live there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'll still be like Western type people, though.
Ish.
Yeah.
Like South Europe.
Like North African. Northern Africa.
Yeah.
Well, they were like saying it's set in Tamriel, and Tamriel's kind of that equivalent of Europe, I guess. But from everything I understand of Hammerfell, it makes me think of like North Africa.
Well, and that's more interesting. And you can do a lot with desert settings that is not just like trackless wastes of sand. There's more happening in arid areas than just that. And
well, you can have interesting oases.
Well, I mean, even as we saw with Skyrim, there are places where you kind of hit the snow line and it becomes green. And, you know, there's a lot more going on there than just like a treacherous cliff covered with snow and ice where it's constantly a blizzard. So I have faith in their environmental designers to create a lot of variety in the world, you know, the overworld. So even if it is desert, which, you know, seems like, oh, that's going to be the most boring place. No, not necessarily.
No, there's good potential. Desert can be a really beautiful biome.
But I'd still rather explore wherever the Khajiit are from. Just, you know, a world full of weird talking cat people.
Jeremy, there's an entire expansion in Elder Scrolls Online featuring the Khajiit and their worlds something.
I thought you were going to recommend I play Final Fantasy XIV. the cat girls there, what are they called?
I don't remember.
You don't remember what the cat girls? There's like
they're cat boys and cat girls, come on.
Yeah, but what are they called?
Oh,
you know this. Come on.
I think it's the Mikot.
Yes, the Mikot.
There you go. I don't pay attention to the lore.
You do in Final Fantasy XIV if you don't pay attention to lore?
I watch Ted Lasso and I grind.
I see. Okay. Huh. That's not what I thought Final Fantasy XIV's appeal was.
No,
I thought the appeal of XIV was like, they get Final Fantasy so well, the story is so good, these villains are amazing, I love all the NPCs who give me quests.
No, you left out the Jason Sudeikis factor.
I didn't even realize he was in Final Fantasy XIV. There's so many things I'm learning this episode. It's amazing.
I think that the Khajiit world is in Elder Scrolls Arena.
Ah.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to that. I could be wrong, but that's what I remember.
That's a big ask right there.
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't even know if you can get that game anymore.
I believe you can, yeah,
can
actually.
You?
I'm sure
it's all free download, I think.
Yeah.
Bethesda, like,
they have Daggerfall, didn't know they had Arena, too.
I think it goes all the way back. I think they've got Battlespire, too.
All of them.
Really? Well, the question is that a good idea? No.
You're right.
But it's there.
Daggerfall's about as far back as I'm willing to go.
Yeah.
Your scientists were so concerned, et cetera, et cetera.
Random note, someone or people are making a source port of Daggerfall to Unity. And you can just download that free version from Bethesda and use it as the source base for it.
Really?
Yeah. Just saw that on GitHub the other day.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of like what people did with Marathon, because that was open source and people created their own engine, and you can just put the content in there and play it on like a semi-modern remake engine. So,
but that's good with Doom.
Yeah, I like when that happens. That's good. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. Anyway, that was the Skyrim episode. I wasn't sure we were going to talk for an hour and a half, and yet here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
An hour and a half exactly, as the minutes just rolled by. There we go. So I feel like we've done our good deed here. So we will wrap this episode, and everyone can give their shout-outs and promotions and so forth. And we'll reconvene again in 10 years to talk about Skyrim's 20th anniversary and maybe what we've been doing in Elder Scrolls 6. I don't know.
How about Morrowind's 20th?
Oh, well, yeah, we could do that. Yeah. We could. There's a lot to Elder Scrolls. It has layers like an onion.
Let's talk about potions.
Potions.
Yeah. So many potions.
So yeah, we'll revisit Elder Scrolls at some point. Oblivion, Morrowind, maybe Daggerfall. I don't know. Anyway, but yes, we will do that more rapidly than Bethesda will create a sequel. We promise this.
Yeah.
It'll be another 8 years before we do this again.
Exactly. Right. Anyway, thanks all of you for coming in and
thanks for having us.
Risking in-person human contact to talk about a game full of dragons and things. Very exciting. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, I have amazing news. This is episode 410 or so of Retronauts. And you know what that means? There are like 409 or so episodes before this, plus all the ones from 1UP and all the Retronauts Live and all the Retronauts Micros. So basically, if you enjoyed this episode and like hearing people talk about old video games, you can listen to hundreds and hundreds of other podcasts about the same thing with many of the same people at Retronauts.com and on podcatchers and so on and so forth. You can go to patreon.com/retronauts and subscribe to the show, where you get every episode a week early with higher bitrate quality than you're probably listening to right now, unless you're already a patron. And you don't have to listen to cross promotions and advertisements, which is a fine, fine deal for the modest sum of $3 a month. For the princely sum of $5 a month, $5 American. You can also get bonus patron-exclusive episodes every other Friday, Discord access, and weekly columns every weekend by Diamond Fight with a little mini podcast to go along with it. That's a pretty good deal for an extra $2, so I highly recommend it. Retronauts.com. No, wait. Patreon.com/Retronauts. That's the one. Yes, go there. You can go to Retronauts.com. It's okay. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking now. Kat, where can we find your stuff on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @_catbot. I also have a podcast that's Axe of the Blood God. A lot of you listening to this probably also listen to Axe of the Blood God, because we're in like the Retronauts extended universe.
There is a Venn diagram happening.
But we also have a Patreon, patreon.com/bloodgodpod, and we're doing lots of cool Pantheon episodes. We're exploring RPGs. Right now we're exploring Phantasy Star, the original for Sega Master System.
Oh, I played through that last year for the first time.
It holds surprisingly well.
It does on Switch.
Very enjoyable. Yes, on Switch.
Don't
play it anywhere else.
Yes.
All right, that's it for me.
Me? You can't really find me very many places anymore. I'm at Greenspeak on Twitter.
And it breaks my heart.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to break
your heart.
You need
to stream more, man.
I need to stream more. Yeah, I have a very busy day job at MinMax Consulting. So if you're making a video game, then you can find me. Otherwise, I probably need to just get out there more, don't I?
I got quiet during the pandemic.
You were on an episode of Blood God. We were talking about System Shock 2.
And you gave me my own podcast for a few episodes there.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Branching Narratives.
That was a great podcast.
That was a great show.
Yeah. One season, in and out.
In and out, but I think we made the most of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ray.
All right. On Twitter, it's RDBAAA, and I also have many ways you can give me money. For example, I'm that username on Twitch, and I have a podcast called No More Whoppers at nomorewhoppers.com, and we have a Patreon there. And I have a game company called Bipedal Dog at bipedal.dog, and you can download a game from there. See? It's many ways. Give me a couple bucks at a time.
And finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, probably on Twitter. That's where I make most of my dad jokes. Even though I'm not a dad, it's a skill I've honed despite this impediment.
Of course.
You can also find me doing stuff at Limited Run Games, writing stuff, publishing stuff, and sometimes even producing the physical versions of games that you buy. If it has a cool book in it, I was probably involved. I can say that. And of course, you can find me on YouTube under a channel by my very name, Jeremy Parrish, where I'm chronicling the history of many, many video game systems. I probably ought to reel it in. But what can you do? There's so much history to talk about, and every week there's more. So that's it. That is this week's lesson in history, talking about Skyrim, which now is historic because it's 10 years old. It's so weird, but time marches on. And yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back again next time that we publish a podcast, so look forward to it. And until then, I have a confession to make. I was the one who stole your sweet roll.